Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep hey. Shaking.
Another great guest, as always. Dr. Lynn Owens is currently with Montana State University. She is also the CEO and founder of Performance Works, and I think Dr. Owens is already on the line with us. So let's see if we can get her on. Dr. Owens, can you hear me?
I sure can, and happy to be here.
Well, we thank you tremendously for coming on the show tonight. I know this is your first time on the show, but obviously we'll hope to have you many more times. We have an audience of young football players, aspiring football players, and some of the information that you have is vital. And kind of want to get started with things tonight with allowing you to talk about your background a little bit, where you're originally from and your education background.
Sure. Well, I grew up in the shadow of the great University of Maryland outside Washington, D.C. in College Park, Maryland. I was an avid sports fan from a really young age. My father had played baseball at the University of Maryland. I'm going to give my age away a little bit here, but when I was a young person growing up, there was no access to women in sports. So while I desperately wanted to be a baseball player and wanted to play football and various kinds of things, I was relegated to the sidelines and sort of lived vicariously through the boys in my life, brothers and my husband eventually and whatever, who had the opportunity to play. I was a gymnast, though. That was accessible to women, and I was able to do that and did that a little bit in my college life. I attended the University of Maryland and received all three of my degrees there. Got an undergraduate degree in physical education and coaching. I then went out and taught middle school for a couple of years and coached every sport possible. And then I returned, worked on my master's degree at the University of Maryland. I was a graduate assistant there, which allowed me the opportunity to teach a lot of classes and do my research. And then I ended up on the faculty at the University of Maryland in the early 80s and was there for 15 years as their director of teacher education in all of those that were going into coaching and or physical education. I directed that program. I then left there, spent a couple of years at McDaniel College, which is a small liberal arts school of about 1,500, quite a big difference from a University of Maryland that's got 50,000 people down to 1,500. It was a Division III school, so it gave me insight into what the athletic community looked like there, quite different. And then after 3 years there, I had the opportunity to come to the West and to the Rockies and join the faculty in the Department of Health and Human Development here at Montana State University. And I was first kind of lured here because my daughter was on a volleyball scholarship here and playing volleyball, and then I had the opportunity to come. So for the past 12 years, I've been here on the faculty, and I teach primarily focusing on sports psychology and applied sports psychology. I conduct research. I have a number of research projects that we've conducted over the last 12 years, all of which focus on how do we harness the strengths of a person to maximize their performance. And a major part of the work that I do is with athletes and asking those questions. How can we maximize the strengths of personality of an athlete to then maximize their performance on the playing field? And we've asked all kinds of questions in order to get at that understanding. So that's what I've been doing up to this point, and I've been privileged to have the opportunity to work for some wonderful coaches and athletes over the years.
Wow, that's great, Dr. Owens. And so you grew up around sports, and like you said, even your dad was a baseball player. Do you think that played into your curiosity behind athletes and training and the coaches that coach them?
Absolutely. My father, and again, this is a long time ago, but my father was very much into being physically fit, to always maintaining and working out. I married my husband, and he was also a baseball player at the University of Maryland, and then I raised two Division I athletes. So while I wasn't able to achieve to the level they did, personally, their interest in it, and you know, back in the day, I was the tomboy, which is what we were called. didn't own the sense of self of actually being an athlete, but we were called tomboys. But always extremely physically active, even though not in organized sport because the opportunity didn't exist. I think my real passion for it developed as I watched my kids, my own children, begin to get involved in organized sports from a very early age, the beginning at age 5 of gymnastics for my daughter, soccer for my son, and then on into a number of other sports throughout their young lives. And I was fascinated by the psychology of competition and the psychology of understanding how each individual athlete differed. I watched coaches that were extraordinary, very, very good coaches who could get anything out of any kid. And then I unfortunately, as most athletes and folks that have been around sports for very long, unfortunately, I saw a lot of really negative situations for athletes, for young people, coaches that absolutely could not serve their athletes that were in front of them, whether that was in a recreational setting, a lower-level youth setting, and then all the way up to the college setting where I've seen quite a bit of it. So that piqued my interest, and you know, I'm a questioner. A researcher is a questioner. For every study I've done, every answer to every question I've ever gotten, it launches about 20 more questions. So constantly on the path to try to drill this down and really understand it, and we've learned a lot over the last decade.
Great stuff. Now, did you start accessing athletes and being able to ask questions during undergrad, or was that something as you became more educated and grew up the ranks that you started accessing athletes, college athletes?
Right. Well, most of that did not really occur from a very structured research perspective, really until I got here to Montana State University. My experience was more experiential. It was more anecdotal, stories of what people would say about their experiences or what I would see as a parent watching my own kids. I read a lot. It was very read everything I could get my hands on about it, so that I could basically coach my own children. And when they were very young, I did coach them in gymnastics for my daughter and soccer for both my son and daughter at one point. My husband coached our kids in basketball for a little while. But then it got to the point where the sports that they were in were not the ones that were my expertise. And so I needed to hand them off to coaches who had more expertise than I did and more experience than I did in those fields. And for my son, it was lacrosse. And for my daughter, it was then volleyball once she outgrew gymnastics at the age of about 12. She was very good, competitive, nationally ranked gymnast. But then she got too big for the sport and moved into volleyball, which was a wonderful fit. But I knew nothing about how to coach that sport. So once you hand your kids off, and I think we probably have some parents on the line here, once you hand your kids off to someone else, you need to trust that they not only know the game and know the X's and O's, but they also understand child development, age and developmentally appropriate practices for your kids. And that becomes more and more important as your kids progress up through middle school, high school, and then on into the college level. Because more and more of it becomes about the psychology of competition, as you know, in addition to obviously the physical training and the X's and O's and the skill development. As mine got to that level, I became more and more involved with it. And then when I joined the faculty here at Montana State, I immediately went into the athletic department and began to form alliances with coaches there. And one coach in particular, our women's basketball coach, invited me to do a study with her team and her coaching staff for a year. So every day at every practice on the road, 5 in the morning, you know, wherever it was, behind the bench in the locker room, I followed that team around. And that just began a whole series. It was the first of about 17 studies that we've done.
Wow, this is some great stuff because, as you noted, we do have parents that listen to our shows. And mm-hmm. and even many of the athletes, they don't recognize that there's a correlation between their personality and their traits, their personality traits and their performance. So you having also kids that play, that's an interesting dynamic for tonight's show. Did you push your kids to get involved in athletics, or was that something that they naturally gravitated towards?
Well, our family was always very active. So my husband continued to play baseball even after we were married and our kids were born. So, you know, they were constantly at games, and I'm just a very active person as well. And so it just was a natural kind of thing to have them involved in sport. I also do know that, you know, there's so many benefits of children in sports, the things that they learn in terms of teamwork, responsibility, commitment, you know, all those sort of social aspects of being involved in teams and pushing themselves and the good things about competition, that I felt that it was very important for my own kids. I also, though, said to both of them, you know, when this is no longer fun, when you're no longer getting a sense of joy in moving your body and competing, when this isn't fun, then we need to really talk about whether this is in your best interest. And for my kids, it was fun. For my daughter, all the way through college, although hard, extremely hard once she got to college, because the level of play goes up, the level of commitment goes up. And that was something that had never really been explained to her, even though I was, as her mom, trying to tell her, but I was just a mom. You know, sometimes you need somebody who's more objective to get your kids' attention. And then for my son, who had the opportunity to play Division I lacrosse, you know, he didn't make it very long. He loved the game, but he played for Maryland, and at that time they were up in the top four, Final Four every year, and that was so highly competitive and so intense and such a commitment that he only played for a little while his freshman year and then decided, you know, I don't want to play this game this way. So he made a smart decision. He after a couple of years in school, transferred from Maryland to Colorado State, where they had a club lacrosse program, and he excelled at that. He loved that, but that intensity of competition that you get when you're in a, you know, playing for a top 10 school, regardless of your sport or your division, that intensity of that and that pressure of that performance was off, and he actually still plays, and he's in his mid-30s now. So having my kids involved in it was really something that I felt was important, that they have sport in their life. I knew there's lifelong lessons from that. I also knew that I couldn't be on the sidelines of a parent, though, and completely disengaged. Because, as you know your kid, parent, better than anybody else does. And there are coaches that will presume to know your kids, and some of them will do an outstanding job and have a real significant impact in a positive way in your child's life. But then there are others that if you just drop them off to practice and drive away or don't come to their games and don't really see the dynamic that's happening between coaches and athletes, that can be a real challenging thing for your child, feeling like they're having to navigate that by themselves.
Wow, I'm having so many revelations hearing you speak, because, being a former Division I athlete myself at the University of Colorado, and having a tough time with that transition, also my father having a tough time with that transition because he couldn't see what was going on and the dynamics between me and the coaches. This is some huge information. So you work with men and women athletes, correct?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see a difference in as far as the competition with the men and women and just the pressure on the athletes? Do you see any difference between the boys and the girls as far as at the college level?
I don't. I think the pressure is the same for both of them, depending on what level they're playing, because the pressure for the coach to win and be successful is the same. So as long as that pressure is on the coach, they apply that pressure to their athletes. Particularly when scholarships are at stake, that is so important, an important dynamic that comes into it. Those coaches, if you think about it on the college level, and I'll just go to Division I, which Colorado would be or Maryland would be. Actually, Montana State is also Division I. At that level, those coaches' livelihood rides on the back of young men, football coaches, young men that are between 18 and 22 for the most part. So that coach's career relies on the success of very young men. The same is true whether it's women's basketball, whether it's volleyball. It doesn't matter. Their success at that level is they need to be winning championships in their conference. They need to be going to playoffs. They need to be winning national titles. That pressure is on them as coaches, and therefore they are their livelihood depends on it, their career depends on it, and therefore that pressure will trickle down through their assistant coaches and then all the way down into those athletes. You said a key word, and one of the words that I focused on in a really interesting research study I did that took 2 years, and that was looking at the transition of high school athletes to college athletes. And the question, given what my work is about, the question that I asked is, what is the effect of the transition to college on personality of football players? So this was all Division I football players. I use a survey that allows us to identify that athlete's strengths and not only what their strengths are, but how highly developed those strengths are. And it helps us understand the degree to which they rely on those strengths for thinking, for feeling, and for decision-making. And no one has ever asked this question about transition to college and then looking at strengths of personality. So I had the opportunity, I've been asked by the football coach at this institution to also teach the NCAA-required freshman life skills class, the CHAMPS class, that's offered at all universities for student-athletes and required at most universities for student-athletes. So I was going to teach that year, and I had the opportunity, and I also was asked by the football coach to do the required, I think it was 8 hours maybe, or maybe 10 hours of orientation work with them during the first week that they were on campus, which with preseason happening, those football players had arrived around the 1st of August. Classes weren't going to start until 3 weeks later. So on the first day that I had them, on the 1st of August, I had these student-athletes, football players, freshmen. They had been on campus less than 24 hours. They had had one practice, but it was more or less just a talk. And I'd had them take the survey, and I ran all the results, and I was able to talk to them about what their strengths were. 3 weeks later, on the first day of classes, I had the same group in the class that I was teaching, the life NCAA Life Skills Champs class. The football players were in there in addition to all the other student athletes that were freshmen. So the volleyball players, track and field athletes, basketball players, men and women, swimmers, just a number of other athletes in there as well. And so we repeated the survey and we looked at it again. And then halfway through the semester, at midterm, gave them the survey. And then again, at the end of the semester, during finals, and then for those football players, I followed them for an academic year, about a year and a half after that, and gave it to them two more times. And we started out with 17 scholarship football players that on that first day. And 2 years later, there were only 6 remaining.
Wow.
And when I go back and look, not only is that number kind of astounding, but when I look at who made it through that transition and who did not, some pretty astounding things came out. One of which was, when student athletes arrive on campus, and that preseason thing, training is intense. And one of the measurements that we're able to take by doing this survey is understand how much energy is draining out of a person because of the stress that they're under, the adaptations they're having to make. And when you think about going from high school to college, the adaptations are huge. The adjustments are huge. Everything changes, not just your sports, the level of competition and your coaches and your teammates, which is huge, but also you're moving from home to away, from being dependent to being independent, to maybe having somebody else take care of every need you have of meals and doing your laundry and managing money and all of that, and now you've got to do all that on your own. And so what I was able to see is that the student, there was a significant number of those football players that on the first day of class, so they've been there 3 weeks only practicing and then transitioning in terms of lifestyle, in a three-week period of time, they were completely out of gas. And this is a visual graphic that we see in the tools that I use, and which meant they started their college academic career with no gas in the tank. So it begs the question, will they then succeed academically? And as it turned out with this group, several of them couldn't cut it academically. Probably could have if they'd understood about this transition and knew more about it and were more prepared for being able to balance things out in their life. But and then some of the other ones, they just could never recover from that transition. And Some of them transferred away. They realized it was not a good fit. Some of them dropped out. Some of them failed out. And the ones that remained standing were those kids that were able to manage their energy. In other words, they took good care of themselves. They made really sound decisions. And they had their priorities straight. And they also had strong support systems of family and friends that they could rely on to kind of keep them grounded. And those kids made it. They also had more flexibility in their profiles and more ability to make decisions on their own. And those are some of the things that we're able to pull out by using the survey that I use. I could go on and on, but I'll just kind of stop here.
No, that's some very interesting information. And I, maybe not as drastic, but I saw the same dynamic every year at the University of Colorado, where you have a certain number of kids who come in, but when you look 4 years later, you know, it's almost half or a little bit more than half, you know, don't make it. So to a certain extent, would you think, because obviously, especially with football, recruiting is the lifeline or lifeblood for these coaches, do you think that recruiting is more of an art or a science?
I definitely believe in both. There's definitely the art of recruiting and forming those relationships with students where with that recruit so that recruit feels that they can trust what this coach is saying. Unfortunately, I don't know about you, but I know of numerous examples where kids are promised one thing and the reality of it is it doesn't pan out that way. They're promised a starting position. They're promised a 4-year scholarship. But in reality, that's not what you get. You get a 1-year renewable, up to 4 years, and sometimes 5 if they've had a red shirt or an injury or something like that. But case in point was my own daughter, and she was a very good volleyball player. Was at a tournament in California and recruited from there. Her junior year and then signed her senior year to a great coach. We really liked him. She felt at home here. It was all good. And she walked on here as a freshman with a full ride and started her freshman year, played every game. Same with her sophomore year. And then we were informed that, you know, they needed a setter. They were going to take her scholarship and give it to somebody else. They still wanted her to play, but then she would have had to pay for it, you know. And those things happen. And whether it is the promise of that or it's the promise of, you know, you will start or you will have this opportunity or whatever, I think you have to be really careful because, again, they're trying to, you know, their hearts are, I would say 90% of the time coaches have their hearts in the right place and they are trying to do the best, what's in the best interest of student athletes. On the other hand, it is their livelihood. And so I have heard coaches say whatever it takes to get somebody to their school. Now the science part of it is where I come in. There is a science to this, and I'll tell you about another study that we did. It had to do with this women's basketball team that I was following here for a year. And so about 6 weeks into that study, I was meeting with her every 2 weeks and sort of telling her what we were finding and what was coming to light, what some of the athletes had been sharing and how this dynamic was all working with this cast of characters, is how I talk about a team. There's a cast of characters here, and everybody has a role to play and different things. And she said, you know, I really, really love these girls. I love them, but I wouldn't have recruited a single one. And she was a brand-new head coach who had inherited a team very late in the season, in the academic year, so she didn't have any of her own recruits. She had great kids, but they didn't play to her style, who she was. And so I said, well, you know, my mind is constantly questioning, and so I said, well, let's model the type of recruit that you would like to have. You know, no one again has ever done this. So there's another tool that I use that allows us to do that, and we modeled the strengths of personality that she thought would work best the way she coached and the system that she wanted to put into place in terms of her basketball team. And so we modeled that. And then I asked her, I said, well, is your point guard the same as your center? Is that the same? Nope. She had different ideas about that. So we broke it apart by position, and we had five different models. And then the next question was, well, that's great. We've modeled this fabulous, you know, basketball player, but does this really exist? Is there anybody on the planet that actually has this and the mad skills you want to be able to, you know, to play for you? So
yeah.
I said, we need to find that out. So I asked her, she had played in the WNBA for 7 years. And I said, I want you to give me the names of former WNBA players or former collegiate women's basketball players that if you could recruit them, you would recruit them. And let's see if they fit your model. And we were particularly focusing on point guards, so that's what we did. So she gave me the names of them. I contacted those athletes. They took the survey, and I matched their results against what we had modeled, and we had a 95% match. So what we're able to know is that depending on who the coach is and how they coach and what their goals are for their team and what their strategies are in terms of play, what their strengths are that they're going to emphasize, that makes a difference in who they should be recruiting. And so while the NCAA has not yet used this as a possibility, it is entirely possible, and I work with coaches to help them understand. We'll model those positions, and then I kind of coach coaches for what to look for when they're recruiting, not just looking at the kid, the athlete during the game, and that those highlight reels, because everybody looks great in those, but behaviorally, what kinds of things to look for when they are off the court, when they're just hanging around with their friends, when they're from you and they're, you know, in the living room kind of thing, to see if you can reel in that profile of the strengths of the athlete that's going to be best suited to how those coaches are going to coach and what they're going to expect of their kids.
Great point, Dr. Owens. You are a parent, and you've had, you know, highly athletic kids that were great athletes. And we do have many parents that are listening to the show, and some of the parents are trying to help their kids evaluate what school to go to, whether it's high school or
mm-hmm.
college. When we look at the transition from high school to college, is there any advice that you could give maybe the mom or dad out there that is wondering if their kid should stay closer to home, or if they have
yeah.
the necessary makeup to succeed out farther away from home?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, and in my experience, I had one that went to school and played sports at the university I was teaching at and living right by. That was my son, and then my daughter went 2,500 miles away. And
yeah.
both of them were happy, and both of them were successful academically, and my son got the heads up that he didn't want to play on that level, but they were good experiences. A couple of things for parents. One, I think the more you can instill in your child the ability for them to make decisions and trust those decisions, the better. What I've seen, not just with student-athletes, but with students in general over the last 35 years of being in higher education, is that more and more students in today's world rely on everybody else to inform their decisions. I think technology has played into that. So, you know, every thought that pops in, every question that pops into a young person's head is broadcast out there on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, and everybody gives them their 2 cents worth, and then they try to sort it out. Well, the reality is they're going to have to need to stand on their own 2 feet and to feel confident in their ability to make decisions. That I don't mean to say don't talk to your parents about things or don't consult, you know, to do that, but to trust your instincts, trust your gut, trust that you have the ability to make decisions. I see young people that I call it paralysis by analysis. They just are paralyzed in making the smallest decisions about, you know, sometimes it's as simple as what should I eat? I mean, it can be really simple. Those larger questions in life then become overwhelming,
yes.
particularly when they're trying to balance the academics, the social life, the athletics, and put that and the geography of where they are. I think if you feel parents like your children need you more for reliance and to lean on, they should probably stay closer to home where you can get to them quicker. For my son, being able to, you know, as he was discovering some things pretty quickly out of the chute, particularly athletically, it was important that I could, you know, he could walk over to my office, or I could drive down the campus and just sit with him a little bit and sort of, you know, help him talk through some things. My
yes.
daughter, on the other hand, was perfectly confident going 2,500 miles away and never had a bad day. We were in touch, you know, this was a while ago. There wasn't texting, but we were in touch via email or on the phone, maybe once or twice a week. And that's the other thing for parents. You got to cut the cord a little bit, even if they're close. The ability to just let them go for a few days, a few weeks without communication is not a bad thing. It tells them, I trust you to be making good decisions. I trust you. I'm here for you. I love you. I'll support you in whatever decisions it is that you're making. I'll give you some advice if you need it. You let me know. You're accessible. That's extremely important. But micromanaging your child's adult decisions, And when they turn 18, they're an adult. But micromanaging adult decisions for them is not a good thing. It's a disservice to them, actually, because what it's teaching them is they don't have the ability to cope in the setting that they have now been placed or have chosen to go. And that coping mechanism is going to make or break that career, not only athletically but also socially and academically. The second thing I would say to parents.
Points.
Oh, I've got one
yeah.
other thing I want to say to parents. That's about time management. Major, major problem with students today is and student athletes in particular, I find is time management. Collegiate sports is a full-time commitment. It's very different than high school, as you know, Terrence. In that not just during your season that you're got practice and you're training, it's a year-round commitment to fall ball and spring ball and summer training. And when you're trying to do that in addition to balance your academics, which are going to be a full-time load as well, you really have to have that ability to manage time. Every minute of the day counts. So, again, working with the high schoolers, even the middle schoolers, to learn time management, that they have a planner, that they understand, you know, how to write a task list and plug things in. They know where their little windows of time will be, that they can get some things done that aren't committed to other things. The more they come with those two things, with the ability to manage time and the ability to make good decisions and feel confident them independent of their parents, I think the more successful they are.
Great point, Dr. Owens, and you have you're a resource of so much content, so we'll definitely have to have you back on, because I'm having many epiphanies listening to you tonight as a parent,
oh,
as a former athlete, you know, as a coach. This is great stuff. We're running out of time, but I do want to end with giving you the opportunity to talk about your company, Performance Works.
Yeah.
You're the CEO and founder, and it's a consulting company. And I just wanted to end with you letting us know why you started the company and what the company is all about.
Sure. Well, you can find out a lot of information about it on the web. My website is www.performanceworksmt, and that's for Montana, .com. So it's performanceworks, W-O-R-K-S-M-T, .com. And it tells a lot about the work that I do. And I really started that as a result of just seeing so many people that don't have any idea of who they are. And the tools that I use and the work that I've done in the past, understanding yourself is absolutely critical. I don't care whether you're a parent, a child, an athlete, a CEO. It doesn't matter. Understanding who you are, who you've been created to be, and how to harness those strengths and maximize your performance. And when I talk about performance, the athletic field is an obvious place that we say, yep, I go out and I perform. But my work encompasses a lot more than that. And also in terms of performance as a, you know, it could be performance as whoever you are at work, or performance as a dad, or performance as a spouse. So my work sort of transcends all of that. And then when I began to ask the question, well, how come we're not always on, we're not always doing good? How come we're all, you know, we have moments that we're completely stressed out? How come sometimes I just behave badly when I've got these strengths? How come sometimes I can't be my best self? And then what I realized is, you know, who we are is a gift. And then that gift is ours to manage. But if you don't know what the makeup of that gift is, then we begin to compare ourselves to other people, and other people will compare us to other people and say, geez, I wish you were more like your sister, or I wish you were more like your mother, or whatever it may be, and that, or I wish you were more like your teammate, when in fact they have totally different gifts than we have, and we start comparing ourselves to that. So while personality is our gift, behavior is a choice. And when people are making bad choices of behavior, which I have seen, or we've all seen that, there has to be a reason. And that reason is stress. So with the tools that I use, we're able to identify that stress. We're able to identify not only what are the gifts and strengths of personality, but how is a person feeling like they have to adapt who they are to deal with life as it is at that moment. And that's where stress comes in. Sometimes we have to dial around our strengths just to survive a situation or learn something new. And stress inhibits our ability then to harness our strengths and maximize our performance, particularly when it's chronic and negative stress. And so I've just seen this, I've done this with people thousands of times. And when we start talking about, you know, your personality is a gift, your behavior is a choice, and then they begin to realize, you know, well, I'm not doing so well, we can dig down into why. And that is all about that stress. We can identify what that is, where that's coming from, what kind of toll is it taking on a person, and then how do we, in fact, fill them back up, so that they are able to harness the gifts of who they are and maximize the performance. So that's what I do. And I work one-on-one with people a lot. I work with teams. I work with corporations. I work with other coaches. I work with families. I work in schools, in churches, and kind of anywhere that people need this, which I think is everywhere, I'm willing to do the work.
Wow, that is some amazing information, Dr. Owens. Once again, www.performanceworksmt.com. Please check out her website. She is somebody that not only has kids that were athletes, but has studied athletes for many years. And we really appreciate your time, Dr. Owens, and we'll definitely have you back on the show soon.
You bet. Thanks so much, Terrence. It was a pleasure, and I'm happy to come back.
All right. You have a great evening. Bye-bye.
And you too. Bye-bye.
So hopefully you guys got something out of tonight, young athletes, parents alike. This was some great information. We bring a lot of athletes into the BYGP locker room, but tonight a doctor, somebody that has studied sports psychology, and the link between personality and performance. And if you don't think there's a link between personality and performance, you're fooling yourself. You know, guys who are high performers, they have their stuff in order and they know how to manage their personality. So tune in on Thursday. We have another great show coming your way. And if you guys haven't checked out Dr. Owen's website, once again, it's www.performanceworksmt.com. Also check out the Before You Go Pro website, www.beforeyougopro.com. There's tons of content there for you guys that is in line with you becoming the best player you possibly can be. So for the rest of the BYGP team and for our executive producer of content, Ms. Ashley Goodman, this is Coach Terrence Wood signing off, and I hope you guys have a wonderful night. We'll see you at the top.